Hello and welcome to Radio Disclosure. This is a little bit different program from normal, but I want you to grab the knob on that radio and turn it up a little bit, because I'm going to ask you a question. What if you went into work tomorrow and they called you in the office and they said, I'm sorry to tell you this, but you're getting laid off. Economics are bad. Business is down. We have to cut staff. You're one of 500 that's being laid off. But the job is over effective immediately. Here's a little money severance pay. We wish you all the luck in the world. So you leave the job, you go home, and you scratch your head. Start going through the newspaper looking for work, calling the employment agencies, sign up for unemployment, and do all those things. A week passes by, 2 weeks pass by, 3 weeks pass by. You go out, maybe you do some interviews, but nothing serious yet. So you keep going and going, and the next thing you know, especially if you have a family, bills are starting to pile up. And a few more months pass by. You're behind on the mortgage. Now you get a foreclosure notice. And they tell you, hey, pal, you got to get out of this house. You got nowhere to go. And let's just suppose for a minute you don't have relatives. You don't have friends or relatives. You can't necessarily move your whole family in with somebody. So there you are. Now, what do you do? Well, you know, you're out of the house. And you're not really any better off trying to rent an apartment somewhere because you've still got payments, all these payments to make, and you got kids and you got all these responsibilities. So you wind up selling off what, you know, furniture you have and things you have, and you liquidated most of your savings, and you wind up in the end with staying in a motel room with your kids. It's, you know, got to keep them off the street. But you're running out of resources. Unemployment checks are coming in, but you can only do so much with that. So you're staying at this motel, and you're looking for work. Can't find work. And this is the story. This is what's happening all across the country right now. We have people living in tent cities. I mean, large tent cities. And the people who are living in those tent cities, a lot of them have degrees. They've got college education behind them. You know, you've been told all your life, get a college education because you'll get a good job. Well, I don't want to say we've been lied to. I just think we've been hoodwinked. We've had a bunch of thugs and criminals take over our country from a business standpoint. People who've learned how to lie on spreadsheets. And they've pretty well near... They've just launched a bomb on the American economy, claiming there's money where there is no money, shuffling papers, collecting bonuses. But there you are. You're in the motel. Now your unemployment runs out. And the next thing you know, you got your kids and your wife. And now you're living in a tent. On the edge or inside of a major city somewhere, just attempting to survive, grabbing a free meal from a rescue mission. How do you find a job if you're living in a tent? What address do you give? I don't know. This is all just crazy. And yet that's the way it is. And this is the United States of America. I heard a story here just recently. Gals, but 29, 30 years old, registered nurse, lost her job, wound up going through all of her savings, lost her apartment, sold her car. She had to. No choice. Some folks get their cars repossessed, but she was fortunate enough to be able to sell hers. Her and the two girls in a motel room for a period of time, and then out on the street living in a tent. And then if you're going to take your kids into a shelter because you want to get them out of the cold, we have the situation you're going to hear about just in a minute about, you know, the shelters in New York City where you have 600 people inside. And out of those 600 people, you have people who have mental illness. You have people who are drug addicts. You have people who are just hardcore criminals. in this room of 600 people, and then you've got your kids in with those people. And these are the hardcore, chronic homeless people that have been around for a long time. This has been their way of life. And now your children are exposed to it. And you have to go back and think about the fact that all of this started, all of this is a result of a bunch of people lying and cheating on spreadsheets, absconding with other people's money. That's the real cause of it. But that doesn't help anything. I mean, we know what the cause is. How do we fix it? We can't get Congress to fix it. They just keep giving the criminals more money. So now, what we're doing here is I am advocating that everybody that's within the sound of my voice, if you have a spare bedroom, if you have a little thing off the side of your house with an outside door, if you have a basement apartment, if you have a garage area that can be turned into a living quarters, just temporary. We're not talking about the lap of luxury here. We're not talking about something luxurious. We're talking about basic necessities. A place for somebody to stay, a place for a mom and two kids, or a father and son, or an elderly couple, or whatever it may be, to get them off the street. Can you open your home to somebody like that? Is it possible that you might have some space that could be converted so that we could get somebody out of a tent? And I'm not talking about chronic people, the chronic homeless. You don't want to take in somebody like that without knowing who they are, because you could wind up in more problems yourself than you'd know what to do with. But we're being overrun by legitimate homeless people. When I say legitimate, these are people who had jobs. These are people who had homes. These are people who were living what you would consider to be the American dream, that their whole life has fallen apart because they've lost jobs. Even if they had money invested in the stock market, they've lost the majority of that. And if they liquidate it, they can only live on that for a certain period of time. But if you have a place in your home, if you have a cottage somewhere, if you have some place that you can allow somebody to stay that's living in a tent, give them time to regroup. Give them some time off for just a little bit. Take the pressure off where they can actually logically think about going out and finding something to do, finding some place to work or to pursue some business venture or anything. Get up on their feet. If you've got something like that, we're asking you to participate and to do this because it's the right thing to do. This is one way that we can fight back in this current economic climate that we have. And in the meantime, if you can't do that, let's say, well, I don't have any space. I don't have anything like that. I'd like to help people out, but I just don't have anything. Well, then there's some organizations that you can volunteer your time. Some organizations you can send them some money instead of sending that check to these preachers they've got the three rolls away, living in multi-million-dollar houses and flying $20 million jet airplanes. Forget those cats right now. Forget them. Let's start helping the folks that really need the help. You know, contact your local city rescue mission. And tell them, I got some space in my house. I would like to help somebody out. And let them screen and find a good candidate for you. And if you can't do that, then write those folks a check for $100, $200, or whatever you can afford. Keep them going. Because they indeed are the ones that are taking the people off the streets and providing them with something and a place to stay. They're actually, you know, they're offering a solution of some sort. Well, I've got some things I want you to listen to, so stay tuned. You're listening to Radio Disclosure.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station, and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
Well, that does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, mother! Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to a vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the Big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the Rise and Fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the Rise and Fall of the Big 8 is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW.
As a Radio Disclosure listener, we need to hear from you. Let us know you're listening. Let us know what you think about this radio program. Do you have some ideas, some people that you'd like to hear on Radio Disclosure, or some subjects that you'd like to hear covered? Let us know. Go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. You'll find a place where you can send us an email. Now, the website is still under construction, so please don't mind our mess. Tell us what city you're listening in, what kind of radio you're using, and how's the signal coming in. Once again, go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. Thank you for listening to Radio Disclosure.
Okay.
With me is Zoilo Torres, and he is with the Partnership for the Homeless in New York City. And welcome aboard, sir, and tell me a little bit about your organization.
Well, we were founded in the early 80s. as a result of a crisis of homelessness back then, where people were sleeping in the subways and train stations and so on en masse, over 25,000, 30,000. Some people even estimated that the number might have reached almost 60,000 at the time. They were homeless in New York City, in this, and because of the abject misery that people were seeing on the streets, the faith-based community, the religious community, called for a meeting with the mayor. And the mayor back then was Ed Koch, and they were demanding what the city want. They wanted to know what the city is going to do about this suffering that was going on in the city. And the mayor said, "Well, if you do something, if you provide space and volunteers, then the city would help." And it was at that time that we were founded, the Partnership for the Homeless. We coordinated the installation of shelters in a number of churches and synagogues throughout the city in all five boroughs, all five counties of New York City. And so, we provide a warm space for basically adult individuals. And at one point, we had 109 shelters throughout the city. Very small shelters, not the municipal shelters that are these congregate large shelters. We had very small, from 5 to 15 men or women in different churches and synagogues. So that's what we've been doing for the last 25, 26 years or so.
Well, you ran into a problem, and I was really surprised to hear about this, but I began to read, and I found that at some point in time, the city of New York or the local government said that they started shutting down shelters, and you know, people be in a... minus degrees outside, 10 degrees below zero, or 20 degrees outside where a person could literally freeze to death. And the government was forcing these people out into the streets and shutting the shelters down. Now, what was that all about?
Well, but they, for budgetary reasons, they're claiming that the entire the faith-based shelter system, we're talking, again, there's a different... The different kinds of shelter systems in New York. There is the municipal shelter system run by the city, and then there's the faith-based shelter system run by us, with a contract, under contract with the city. So, and ours were all over, scattered all over the city, just very recently, in 08 and in 2008, the city began to want to cut its budget, and at first it started with a 2% cut, and then it went from a 2% to a 7% to a 10% cut, and they started insisting on that we cut the budget by way of closing down beds, in other words, closing down shelters. We went from 109 a couple of years ago to 90. And then from the summer of 08 to up until this year, we went down to 56 shelters, and now the city has put out what they call a request for proposal, meaning that they want to bid out the rest of the system to the lowest bidder, and rewrote and restructured the entire system to the point that we're not bidding for it because we think it's designed to fail. And if those new criteria are instituted, we'll be forced to shut another 30 or so shelters, which will bring us down to 24. So
you've gone basically from 109 shelters, you would be down to 24 shelters.
Right, come June 30th of this year. Because that's just when the new contract is going to kick in. And so the city is moving away, yes, from shelters based in churches and synagogues, which we find to be, ironic, because you know, these churches and synagogues run these shelters by way of volunteers. In other words, the city does not pay for labor to supervise the homeless, and they also provide free space. So they're saving money, actually. Now they do provide the cots, and they do provide the sheets, and they do provide the pillows and so on and so forth. But if they were to hire, we at one point in the season, I mean, throughout the year, there are over 6,000 volunteers actually staff these shelters, and also, you know, provide the free space. You can imagine the millions of dollars it would cost if you were to hire 6,000 people to supervise the homeless or do a fellowship with the homeless.
Oh goodness, that's a staff.
yeah. I mean, you know, and
by the time you get done paying for that and benefits and other things that other folks have to have in order to work
exactly.
a job, you know, you are way up there in dollars and cents.
Yeah, millions, in the millions, and imagine if they had to rent the space that they're using, because this is free space. And imagine the millions of dollars that will cost. So we're saying that there are all ways that we can make the system more efficient. And then it does not involve, you know, cutting capacity. We can say, you know, we can close down inefficient shelters and open up new ones that are more efficient, that will save dollars, and that would be a way of dealing with the budgetary problem. But don't cut off your nose to spite your face. I mean, you're throwing out what we say. I hate to use these slogans, but you know, they're throwing out the baby with the bathwater, you know, so to speak.
Well, what are you folks seeing now? I mean, we're dealing in a situation here where we have, I guess I want to say, we have record numbers of homeless. These are homeless people that are over and above the chronic or the systemic homeless. Now, all of a sudden, there's a new flood of people coming onto the homeless scene, being forced into the streets by means of they've lost their job, they've liquidated resources. Tell me a little bit about that. What have you heard about this particular thing, or what have you seen firsthand?
Well, that wave hasn't really hit us yet. It's going to hit us. We know by way of looking at the numbers of foreclosures, what we call the vacancy rate here in New York. In other words, you know, the amount of apartments that are on the market. And that's only about a 2% vacancy rate, meaning that there's very little affordable housing. Right now in New York, we have close to 40,000 homeless people. 40,000, about 15,000 of which are children. The economic crisis in New York City, which we anticipate will last for at least a year to 2 years, we really haven't, you know, seen. And right now we're at crisis proportion. When you have 40,000 people homeless in the city, you know, that's equivalent to some small cities.
That's true. And how many homeless children are you saying that there is there?
About close to 15,000.
15,000 homeless children,
right,
in the city of New York, in the United States of America, a place where this kind of thing is not supposed to happen.
Exactly.
You said earlier, you made the statement that without some reform in some areas, and I assume you're meaning in terms of government and law, you know, it's going to get worse.
Right.
What kind of reform are we talking about?
Well, in the immediate, I mean, thousands of people, households are in the foreclosure block, so to speak. They're about to be cut. There has to be some policy to put a freeze, a moratorium on that. Because these people, some landlords have apartments that the tenants themselves don't even know that's happening. And then one day, some marshal is going to come by with an eviction notice, and they would not have any idea that was going on. And so there has to be some sort of moratorium. We also think that that government has to play a role in the creation of affordable, low-income housing. Because one of the problems in the city of New York is this lack, a dramatic lack of low-income affordable housing. Without that, you cannot neither prevent nor deal with the problem. And there also some a need for the kind of services that help those who can't help themselves, either because of some mental problem or some substance abuse problem. You need to have the kind of services that not only provide housing but also provide the, what we call the wraparound services, I mean, so they can stay in their homes and not fall back into homelessness. I mean, these are just some things that that government has to play a role in, because you know, this is a social problem, and government is where the, you know, the social wealth resides, and you can't tell me the resources aren't there. I mean, the budget for the mayor of New York just submitted a budget to the city council of $60 billion. $60 billion. Now, you know, it's not a matter of resources, it's a matter of priority. Are you going to make the most vulnerable in society a priority or not? You know, and that's reflected in your budget. It's a political problem at this point. It's a problem of, you know, civil society stepping up to the plate and demanding of the elected officials to rearrange the priorities of government and make those most vulnerable, you know, a priority, both on a prevention from a prevention perspective to a intervention perspective.
In terms of the contrast between a government shelter, I want to say government shelter, city shelter, whatever, mm-hmm. as opposed to a faith-based shelter, you know, around the country, there's a lot of homeless people sometimes that they just decide they just rather sleep in the street as to have to mess around with with some of the shelter systems.
Exactly.
What causes that? What are the hamstrings there where a person's, you know, the person says, I'd rather sleep on the park bench. I don't want to go to a shelter.
Well, see, many of the municipal shelters, and again, I'm talking in the context of New York City, where you have, 7 million people. The municipal shelters are run by the city are congregate shelters. In other words, they could have anywhere from 100 to 600 people in one, an armory, for instance. That's, you know, 300 to 400, 500, 600, you know, beds lined up, and people are they become very dangerous. They become, you know, all sorts of people. Some criminal elements are let in. Some people really bad mental illness or drug addiction, and it gets to a point where the weak are preyed upon by the strong, and you go here in New York City, you go into these shelters, and it's like Dante's Hell. I mean, there's violence, there's drug and open drug use in the area, and again, the weak are preyed upon by the strong. That's the municipal shelters. That's where they basically warehouse people, and just take them off the street and warehouse them, provide very little services to help them deal with their problems. Now, our shelters are anywhere between 5 to 15 individuals, and they're supervised or staffed by volunteers who do it, who are members of congregations, who do it because of a moral conviction. And they provide a fellowship. They provide, interaction and some counsel. In fact, in our shelters, there were in some of our shelters, they provide council that help people find housing and help people find jobs or get better their education by way of some training or something. Those are the causes of homelessness. The lack of financial resources, the lack of education, and the lack of counseling if you have a particular problem. So our shelters are, we believe, is the better approach to dealing with the causes of homelessness, not these big congregate shelters where people are warehoused. That's the difference. That's the difference that we are. And that's what we are now trying to not only talk to people about and convince people that our approach does deal with the cause of homelessness, and the municipal approach is basically warehousing people and just for the sake of taking people off the street. They're not really dealing with the causes of homelessness. What they're doing is managing.
Well, I guess if a person has lost their job, they've exhausted all of their funds, they've lost their apartment, they've sold all their furniture, they've used that to pay for a motel bill somewhere to keep their kids off the street, and then they're forced into the street. Maybe they don't have relatives or friends to stay with or something like that. Now, they take those kids into one of these armory shelters where you have 600 people indoors, and so they're exposing their kids to these to folks that are chronic homeless people because of drug addiction, mental illness, or because they're criminals or whatever they are. In other words, now all of a sudden you have two children being exposed to all of this and really no recourse. I can understand that. I think I would choose to sleep on a park bench if it wasn't so cold outside.
Yeah, that's what we're telling the government here, is that, a frail senior citizen is not going to go into one of these municipal shelters because they know they're dangerous to be preyed upon. So they'd rather sleep on a bench, in a park, or in the subway. Even the young, know how dangerous these places are and choose not to go to them. The city does not house or provide shelter to all the homeless. Many of them are on the streets because they refuse to go into these municipal shelters. It's just, and let me tell you that I've volunteered to stay in one of our shelters, a few times myself, and I've seen men who get up the next morning and go to work. They have jobs. They actually do have jobs. The problem is, and here in New York, the context here is the price of housing. The rents are so high that people can't afford them, so they wind up in a shelter.
So it's either if you have a place to stay, you don't have anything to eat, and if you have anything to eat, you don't have any place to stay.
That's the reality which we're living in right now.
What about the medical side of things? What about elderly folks that wind up or folks with special needs, with folks that suffer from high blood pressure and diabetes and all kinds of things like that? What happens to those folks?
Again, that's something that here in New York, the government has refused to recognize. Here in New York, we have what they call drop-in centers. Drop-in centers are centers where the homeless resort to, particularly in times when it's cold or when it's too hot. And they also, when they want a meal or they want to take a shower, they go to these drop-in centers we have here in New York. There are drop-in centers that are specialized. We run a drop-in center for senior citizens. And seniors come to us. They won't go to other drop-in centers where there's what they call a mixed clientele, so to speak. They go only to the specialized drop-in center that is designed to meet the geriatric needs of senior citizens. But the city has chosen to eliminate it. Come June 30th, we won't be able to run a drop-in center for senior citizens because now the senior citizens will be combined with other populations, and they say that that's the best way to deal with the homeless. Is to they will all get service, they will all get the kind of service they deserve, in a combined dropping center model. And we say that's not true. The fact is that if seniors sees that they're being mixed up with other populations, they won't go. They won't participate. They'll stay out in the street, again, for fear of being preyed upon by others. So, I mean, the situation, if the general public doesn't, you know, take notice of it and begin to pressure their elected officials to focus on this, this economic crisis is just going to increase the suffering in the population. And believe me, you know, when you talk about senior citizens, when you talk about families, you're talking about single parent households, you know, it could be any one of us. It could be our neighbors, you know, that would fall into this, you know, a misfortune or experience an episode of homelessness. And government will not be there to help.
Well, let me ask you a question. How many homeless people do you think, what is the death rate? How many people die, and not just from exposure, but say from lack of medical attention?
There's been certain years in which 100 or more have been found dead in the street. I mean, just recently, one of my staff experienced a homeless death person in the subway. I mean, they actually witnessed someone dead the subway who was homeless. And the thing also, we also have to put it in the context of the taxpayer, because, you know, the homeless people get sick. They get sick out in the street, and they wind up in emergency rooms. And they wind up, and that also causes a strain on budgets. You know what I'm saying? So you know, there is the tragedy of death, but there's also the tragedy of people getting ill and winding up, in hospitals and in emergency rooms at public expense. So it's also costing the taxpayer money. It's in everybody's interest to deal with the homeless.
Well, yeah, because a homeless person winds up at the emergency room of a hospital, and if it's something chronic, and they wind up being hospitalized. I mean, you're looking at hospital bills up into the thousands of dollars just for one person.
Exactly.
And then it makes no sense. They take that person, they correct the problem, and they stick them right back out on the street where it can happen again.
Again.
You know, I don't know. Well, let me ask you this. I know I've taken up enough of your time. What is it that people can do? Somebody listening to this radio show, what would you ask them to do? What could there be? What could their part be in this?
Well, you know, the problem is a social one, and it has political ramifications. In other words, you know, particularly people who are in a situation where they can contact their elected officials and ask them, what are they doing about homelessness? Where are the programs that we can refer people to? Where are the are we working with in partnership with the religious community to help provide immediate services and also plan for the long term? This is really, you know, a social problem that has to be resolved politically, and people, particularly voters, can contribute to its solution, to its resolution, by applying the kind of political pressure that will free up the resources to deal with the problem. Because as individuals, we're not going to be able to solve it. I mean, you cannot provide a bed on your own. You know, we need society to do it as a society, and that means bringing in government, and that means getting government to change the policies and create the priorities that would solve this problem. Providing shelter is an emergency measure, but we don't have enough to solve. solve the problems without, you know, government stepping in.
If individuals, and what we've been encouraging folks to do is, if you have, you know, a spare room in your house, if you have a basement, you have a garage that can be turned into a temporary apartment, that's good, and we're asking folks to do this. But before they take someone in, they really ought to go through a little screening process. They ought to go through some agency somewhere that can help them sort out someone that they can deal with in their environment, you know, because some of the chronic homeless people, it's like you said, you could get yourself in a lot of trouble taking in certain types of people.
Yeah, our system. Yeah, right. Our system here is the drop-in center, where we did, and these are also government finance agencies. There, the homeless go to, and there are caseworkers there. There's social workers, and there are, in some cases, medical assistants for those who need it. And what happens? What goes on there is basically a screening process. Before they go to a church bed, before they're sent to a church to sleep overnight or under the care of a volunteer who is not a professional, they must be deemed appropriate for that bed. In other words, if they're not appropriate, then they find the services that are appropriate. They'll send them to an agency that can take care of them, because you do have chronic homelessness to mental illness. You know, a volunteer is not
capable. Yeah, they can't. It'd be difficult for them to deal with something like that.
Right. But see, the drop-in center is where they determine, you know, the appropriate services for the individual. So yes, I particularly churches and synagogues should be the ones to take the lead on this, and from a civil society perspective, and insist that government establish these kinds of agencies that can screen and refer the homeless to proper services.
I want to thank you so much for your time, sir. This has been an enlightening conversation. It's been a shocking conversation, and I've got an education talking to you here in about 20 minutes that that I didn't have before we started our conversation. Once again, our guest is Zoilo Torres. Am I saying your name correctly, sir?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, it is.
And you are with the Partnership of the Homeless.
I'm the director of the Emergency Shelter System for the Partnership.
All right. And you could be reached. If folks go to the Partnership of the Homeless.org. They can find out more about your organization, and they can also contact you if there's something they need or they want to talk further about the situation. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
It's the 4040. It's a new 40-meter monoband antenna. It looks just like the Adventurer or the TW2010. It's the perfect antenna for high-performance DX communications in a portable package. This antenna system is ideal for camping, emergencies, or permanent installation where you gotta go stealth. 7.0 to 7.3 megahertz without the necessity of either manual band changing or the need for a controller. Just attach the feed line and you're ready to talk. That's the Trans World Adventurer 4040. Go to their website. Take a look. Transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is tux-support.com. Tux like tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's tux-support. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website. as a Radio Disclosure listener, we need to hear from you. Let us know you're listening. Let us know what you think about this radio program. Do you have some ideas, some people that you'd like to hear on Radio Disclosure, or some subjects that you'd like to hear covered? Let us know. Go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. You'll find a place where you can send us an email. Now, the website is still under construction, so please don't mind our mess. Tell us what city you're listening in, what kind of radio you're using, and how's the signal coming in. Once again, go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. Thank you for listening to Radio Disclosure. Hello and welcome to Radio Disclosure. This is a little bit different program from normal, but I want you to grab the knob on that radio and turn it up a little bit, because I'm going to ask you a question. What if you went into work tomorrow and they called you in the office and they said, "I'm sorry to tell you this, but you're getting laid off. Economics are bad. Business is down. We have to cut staff. You're one of 500 that's being laid off, but the job is over, effective immediately. Here's a little money severance pay. We wish you all the luck in the world." So you leave the job, you go home, and you scratch your head. Start going through the newspaper looking for work, calling the employment agencies, sign up for unemployment, and do all those things. A week passes by, 2 weeks pass by, 3 weeks pass by. You go out, maybe you do some interviews, but nothing serious yet. So you keep going and going, and the next thing you know, especially if you have a family, bills are starting to pile up. And a few more months pass by. You're behind on the mortgage. Now you get a foreclosure notice. They tell you, "Hey, pal, you got to get out of this house. You got nowhere to go." And let's just suppose for a minute you don't have relatives. You don't have friends or relatives. You can't necessarily move your whole family in with somebody. So there you are. Now, what do you do? Well, you know, you're out of the house, and you're not really any better off trying to rent an apartment somewhere, because you've still got payments, all these payments to make, and you got kids, and you got all these responsibilities. So you wind up selling off what, you know, furniture you have and things you have, and you liquidated most of your savings, and you wind up in the end with staying in a motel room with your kids. Got to keep them off the street. But you're running out of resources. Unemployment checks are coming in, but you can only do so much with that. So you're staying at this motel, and you're looking for work. Can't find work. And this is the story. This is what's happening all across the country right now. We have people living in tent cities. I mean, large tent cities. And the people who are living in those tent cities, a lot of them have degrees. They've got college education behind them. You know, you've been told all your life, get a college education because you'll get a good job. Well, I don't want to say we've been lied to. I just think we've been hoodwinked. We've had a bunch of thugs and criminals take over our country from a business standpoint. People who've learned how to lie on spreadsheets. And they've pretty well near, they've just launched a bomb on the American economy, claiming there's money where there is no money, shuffling papers, collecting bonuses. But there you are, you're in the motel. Now your unemployment runs out. And the next thing you know, you got your kids and your wife, and now you're living in a tent. On the edge or inside of a major city somewhere, just attempting to survive, grabbing a free meal from a rescue mission. How do you find a job if you're living in a tent? What address do you give? I don't know. This is all just crazy. And yet that's the way it is. And this is the United States of America. I heard a story here just recently. Gals, but 29, 30 years old, registered nurse, lost her job, wound up going through all of her savings, lost her apartment, sold her car. She had to. No choice. Some folks get their cars repossessed, but she was fortunate enough to be able to sell hers. Her and the two girls in a motel room for a period of time, and then out on the street living in a tent. And then if you're going to take your kids into a shelter because you want to get them out of the cold, we have the situation you're going to hear about just in a minute about, you know, the shelters in New York City where you have 600 people inside. And out of those 600 people, you have people who have mental illness, you have people who are drug addicts, you have people who are just hardcore criminals. In this room of 600 people, and then you've got your kids in with those people. And these are the hardcore, chronic homeless people that have been around for a long time. This has been their way of life. And now your children are exposed to it. And you have to go back and think about the fact that all of this started, all of this is a result of a bunch of people lying and cheating on spreadsheets, absconding with other people's money. That's the real cause of it. But that doesn't help anything. I mean, we know what the cause is. How do we fix it? We can't get Congress to fix it. They just keep giving the criminals more money. So now, what we're doing here is I am advocating that everybody that's within the sound of my voice, if you have a spare bedroom, if you have a little thing off the side of your house with an outside door, if you have a basement apartment, if you have a garage area that can be turned into a living quarters, just temporary. We're not talking about the lap of luxury here. We're not talking about something luxurious. We're talking about basic necessities. A place for somebody to stay, a place for a mom and two kids, or a father and son, or an elderly couple, or whatever it may be, to get them off the street. Can you open your home to somebody like that? Is it possible that you might have some space that could be converted so that we could get somebody out of a tent? And I'm not talking about chronic people, the chronic homeless. You don't want to take in somebody like that without knowing who they are, because you could wind up in more problems yourself than you'd know what to do with. But we're being overrun by legitimate homeless people. When I say legitimate, these are people who had jobs. These are people who had homes. These are people who were living what you would consider to be the American dream, that their whole life has fallen apart because they've lost jobs. Even if they had money invested in the stock market, they've lost the majority of that. And if they liquidate it, they can only live on that for a certain period of time. But if you have a place in your home, if you have a cottage somewhere, if you have some place that you can allow somebody to stay that's living in a tent, give them time to regroup. Give them some time off for just a little bit. Take the pressure off where they can actually logically think about going out and finding something to do, finding some place to work or to pursue some business venture or anything. Get up on their feet. If you've got something like that, we're asking you to participate and to do this because it's the right thing to do. This is one way that we can fight back in this current economic climate that we have. And in the meantime, if you can't do that, let's say, well, I don't have any space. I don't have anything like that. I'd like to help people out, but I just don't have anything. Well, then there's some organizations that you can volunteer your time. Some organizations you can send them some money instead of sending that check to these preachers they've got the three rolls away, living in multi-million dollar houses and flying $20 million jet airplanes. Forget those cats right now. Forget them. Let's start helping the folks that really need the help. You know, contact your local city rescue mission and tell them, I got some space in my house. I would like to help somebody out. And let them screen and find a good candidate for you. And if you can't do that, then write those folks a check for $100, $200, or whatever you can afford. Keep them going. Because they indeed are the ones that are taking the people off the streets and providing them with something and a place to stay. They're actually, you know, they're offering a solution of some sort. Well, I've got some things I want you to listen to, so stay tuned. You're listening to Radio
Week after week, you hear us talk about Trans World Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna.
I found this vitamin.
Thank you.
Put out by the Premier Micronutrient Corporation. And it's a different vitamin than I'd ever taken before. Matter of fact, it'll be a different vitamin than you've ever seen. Metabolic has all kinds of things going for it. Number one, first off, it was designed correctly. Not like vitamins you buy in the supermarket or off the shelf. It's known that water-soluble micronutrients have a half-life of 4 to 6 hours, and fat-soluble constituents have a half-life of 6 to 8 hours. So it only makes sense to maintain a steady state of proper antioxidants in your body. The supplements have to be taken twice a day. There's no other way. You want to take a vitamin that actually makes you feel different? You need Metabolic. Now Metabolic and another formula they make called Veterans Formula, they don't contain iron, copper, or manganese. Now, these minerals are known to interact with vitamin C, and they produce excessive free radicals if they're in your vitamin supplement. And this production of free radicals caused by this combination is in more than 95% of the commercial vitamins that you'll find on the supermarket shelf. It's exactly the opposite of what you want. In addition, these minerals, especially iron, can be dangerous. Because men of all ages and women after menopause don't excrete iron in any significant amount. And that excess of iron in your system causes more free radicals. Diabetes and high blood pressure, that's the formula for you. There's also the Veterans Formula. What you need to do is go to the website and take a look. It's pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us. Very simple to remember. Believe me, you take Metabolic or Veterans Formula for 2 weeks, and you will be a different person. Take a look on the website. Go visit the website at pmcscience.us. That's pmcscience.us.
We should be good to go here.
I'm talking to Pastor Phil Kwiatkowski, and I think I've got the name right.
Yes, you do.
And Pastor Phil is with Pacific Garden Mission in Chicago, Illinois. And
yes.
I'm sure a lot of you folks are very familiar with the Unshackled program. It runs on every radio station on Earth, I think. You know, we wish it did.
Oh, yes, it does.
I was just saying, I wish I could count how many times I've mashed the play button on Unshackled at some station somewhere. And
it's been a great program that has impacted many for many years.
You know, and what is so cool about Unshackled now is that it takes you back to an era of radio drama. And it's something you don't hear on radio today. So when you catch Unshackled, you know, you stay riveted to your seat. I mean, it's like, it's so effective. You ever caught the program while driving down a lonely highway at night?
Well, the sound of the organ is riveting. So as soon as you hear that sound, you know exactly what it is.
I know, but when you're driving so many times, you know, you hit a stretch of highway, Unshackled comes on, and it's like, you know, that period of time just flies by. You know, you don't even think about it, you know.
And, exactly.
And, of course, it's available online now. Folks can download it. You can put it in your iPod, you know, and listen to it. What I want to talk to you about, Pastor Phil, is one of the things we're seeing. We're seeing a
large influx of new homeless people. And the new homeless people, I want to call them the new homeless people. They're a little different variety of the folks that you normally run into that you've been dealing with for years.
Years ago, you may have thought of an alcoholic in an alley somewhere, and then you had the issues with drugs. But we are seeing a lot of homelessness caused by the economy. You're seeing professionals, individuals that had homes, that had families. Now they can't pay their mortgages or meet their bills. So they're homeless, and they're out on the streets, and they need some help.
We're talking not just about single people. We're talking about whole families.
Yes. We see families, children, and there's probably no sadder sight to see than a family coming with young children with nowhere to go, and up here in Chicago in the dead of winter, that could be tragic.
Well, you know, I hear that the tent cities are growing and growing, and in some cities there has been even talk about legalizing the tent cities.
That tells you that there is a growing problem. We're seeing that here in Chicago in this winter. We've seen record numbers. And when you have an institution that's nearly 132 years old and you're seeing record numbers, that says something about the state of society.
Are you folks overloaded?
Yes, we are. We've seen numbers well over 1,000 this winter.
Well, are you to the point where you actually have to turn folks down? In other words, if a family shows up at the door, are you so overloaded and so jam-packed that if you take in another family, you're probably going to be in trouble with a fire marshal?
Well, it's always been our policy to never turn anyone away. So when somebody comes to our doors, we have mats we put on the floors. Up here in Chicago, you know, people would rather sleep on a mat, or we'd rather find a place inside for them as opposed to having them outside, because, again, outside is life or death. So we do accept anybody that comes to us, but we are trying to fit people anywhere that we can.
Well, one of the things we've been talking about, and that is for folks especially, if you're blessed, you have a home, if you have a spare bedroom, if you have a basement area, even if you have a garage that can be fixed up and made into a makeshift apartment for a temporary season, that we've encouraging folks to do this because I believe God will bless them for it. You know, I think this is something that a good time in our history for folks to pull together and show love one for another and actually accomplish something. However, I hate to use these terms in stereotype, but there are what I consider to be systemic people or systemic mm-hmm. homeless people or chronic
Correct.
Homeless people, and these are folks that would be very difficult to take into your home because of all the problems they have and they're you know, somebody that's been called to deal with those folks can deal with them and help them because they definitely need help. They just can't be shoved out into the cold because they're systemic homeless people. But I'm talking about the new variety of homeless, the new folks that are just, you know, that are literally being forced into the streets. I'm thinking with Pacific Garden Mission being in an overload situation as it is, is there a way that folks can contact the mission to find out, or be recommended to a family or a group or a couple or something that are in need of something like this?
Yeah, that is the best way to go about it, is you contact, whether it's you're in Chicago and Pacific Garden Mission or in Nashville, a local rescue mission there, but to contact the people who know what they're doing and who have expertise in handling those issues. And where there are many families that are not homeless because of an addiction or any type of situation like that, but there is a true situation because of a job or their mortgage that they need help, and they can guide you to them and you can help them out that way.
Tell us a little bit about Pacific Garden Mission. For folks that don't know, you folks have been around forever. You know, years ago I met Harry Saulnier and got a tour of the place. And it was, man, I'll tell you what, it was very, very impressive to see folks so dedicated to a chronic problem. Tell us about...
Yeah, we're as I said, we're going on 132 years old, and we are a ministry that deals with the homeless here in Chicago. We have homeless men, women, children. We have a full-time medical clinic where anybody can come free of charge. We have doctors, podiatrists, they have free dental work, a clothing room, a breakfast, lunch, dinner. But the most important thing is we do preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, because we believe change is not outward, but it's inward. And we have a program, a live-in program, where men and women can come and they can get their life together. There's Bible study, counseling. We graduate them after a year and try to place them in jobs. So it is an all-encompassing ministry that tries to deal with all of the issues that would face homelessness. And we just continue to need prayer. We continue to need support, because as the economic situation worsens, we're seeing more and more.
Well, let me ask you this question. The economic situation, has it taken its toll as far as folks supporting Pacific Garden Mission?
Yeah, yes, we see that. I think when people look at discretionary funds, they're going to look at where they give. And where you may not see people stop giving, they're going to give less. If it's between your mortgage, your bills, your groceries, or a ministry you may support, people may look at the ministry they support. So we have seen a little dip in our giving, which we would encourage, because we're not seeing a dip in people coming. So we still have the same needs that we always had, and even more.
You know, and this is not the time, folks, to pull in the horns out of fear and say, whoa, I don't think I can send. Matter of fact, I would encourage you, if you have never supported Pacific Garden Mission, go to their website, and you can just Google them, or I guess you could probably Google Unshackled.
You know? Yes, and it'll come right up, yes.
And look over the website and see everything they do. And if you've never given before, and I'm going to be honest, I'm going to say something here that it may not set well with a whole lot, but a lot of folks are very skeptical of giving because they see all the flashy stuff on television. I mean, it's very difficult when you're in straits yourself to pick up your checkbook and write a check to somebody that has four Rolls Royce in the driveway.
Exactly.
You know, and they're talking about the 100-fold return. It's hard to reckon with that. But I'm talking about a legitimate, God called organization, Pacific Garden Mission, who has made a huge difference in the city of Chicago and all across the country. I've got friends of mine that I knew in Detroit whose stories wound up on Unshackled because for some reason they were in Chicago and their lives were changed by the mission outreach of Pacific Garden Mission. So let me ask you this question. Give me some information, too, and I don't know how much of this that you can do, and I know I don't want to take up a lot of your time, of maybe some folks that you've seen firsthand. I mean, not necessarily, I don't want names or anything, but I mean situations you've seen firsthand within the last month or two that you found just distressing.
Well, we're seeing a number of women that are homeless. Our women population is double, but also a number of, fathers with children. I have a young guy here. He's probably 18 to 19 years old with a young 7-month-old baby. He's on our program, and he's learning the Bible, but he carries around a 7-month-old baby with him. I think of another young woman here who has two young children with her. I think a kindergartner and a 4-year-old, and when we think of thoughts of childhood, we don't think of growing up in a rescue mission, but because of a situation, they're here, and it's heart-wrenching to see children so young walking up and down our halls where the memories of a childhood won't be memories of a fireplace or a big backyard, but memories of a homeless shelter. But that's what we have, and that's what we deal with. There's a lot of young people here, and they're getting younger and younger all the time.
How difficult is it in reality, because you deal with the actual reality side of things, how difficult is it for some of these folks to actually find jobs?
Well, it is difficult because in Chicago, and I'm sure as many big cities around the nation, is the jobs that they're offered are not well-paying jobs. Rent and everything is still not kept pace with the downturn of the economy. Everything is still very expensive. So if they go somewhere to get a job, they're still not paid any type of wage, so they're still struggling, there's children involved, there's past issues, so it is very difficult to make it. And so many of them remain at a shelter.
Well, of the ones that can find jobs, the type of jobs they're able to find,
they're usually the lower paying jobs.
And they, but what I'm saying is it, then it also becomes almost as impossible for those folks to work, especially if it's a single parent with kids, to be able to find child care, pay for an apartment or someplace to live, and then on top of that buy groceries, not even thinking about any sort of medical care.
Exactly, and where you need a place where there's your base, where you change, shower, have change of clothes to watch your children, all those things that you just mentioned, and it is very difficult, especially when you're just starting.
What suggestions would you have? You know, we have a person listening today, and they're in their home and they're blessed. They still have their job. They still have maybe a considerable amount of money in savings, and maybe they were lucky enough not to invest in the stock market. And they want to make a difference. What can they do?
Well, it depends on the level of interest. I mean, I would begin by definitely supporting organizations like Pacific Art Mission that deal with the homeless. But if a person really wanted to get involved, if you're an employer, to contact a place like a shelter, a place where you know people are, that, as you mentioned earlier about the systemic homeless, but trying to get those that are being helped, whether they're on a program, and seeing what you have to offer. And the biggest changes we've seen in the lives of people are people that somebody will come down and personally disciple, get to know them on a first-name basis, work with them, pray with them, see them get their GED, come alongside of them. And those are the best. The volunteers that come here are invaluable because they perform a service that is beyond belief. So get involved with an organization, get to know some of these people, walk alongside of them, and help them through.
Across the country, for folks that live in different cities and different states, could you give us the names or some of the folks that you know at like missions that would be local to them that they could work with?
Well, there's a group called the IUGM, the International Gospel Rescue Missions, and I would just Google them up, and there's a number of rescue missions, you know, Christ-honoring, Bible-believing rescue missions that you, in your city, maybe near you, that you can get in touch with. But I would encourage you to get involved.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, and this I find this really alarming, but I'm finding out that this is really the truth. There are folks right now living in tent cities, families living in tent cities.
Yes.
Where the father and or the mother both have formal educations.
Yes.
They have had professional jobs and careers that have literally just been blown apart by this economic situation.
Yes.
They've literally lost everything they have. Now, my question is how much of this are you seeing? I mean, about folks that have degrees that if positions were available, these people would be up and at it immediately.
Surprisingly more than you would believe. I mean, I've seen here, right now I think we have a couple of nurses that are here, whether they're just got on staff or they're on the program. I've seen a couple lawyers. I've seen a doctor. You have seen people from every profession that are homeless, and this is recently, right now, that are looking for some sort of help. So it would surprise you to see the number of people that do have degrees that yet have nowhere to work and nothing to do.
And the only reason I bring this up, because those folks obviously don't need help any more than the person that was just a common laborer somewhere or has no formal education. It's just that this is not a situation where people are just not wanting to work or they're just wanting to loaf and live off of somebody else. This is not the case at all. And I think one of the things that really has burdened me is, you know, people need an opportunity.
Yes.
And I think the rest of us, because of the fact that we've got into this situation, regardless of whose fault it is, I think that it's up to the rest of us to try to help make it right for those that don't have an opportunity.
Well, I agree. When you look at the scriptures and you look at God's love for the homeless, the poor, the downtrodden, that is the heart of God. And it is for God's people at this time to get their knees dirty, to get down and pray, but also to lend a hand and to help and to assist where we can.
Well, I want to thank you very much once again. Pacific Garden Mission in Chicago, the you know, if you Google it, you can give me the website, if you would, if you give me the URL.
Sure, www.pgm.org.
Boy, that is simple.
Nice and easy. That's right.
www.pgm.org. Now, you may say, well, I live in Kansas, and I'm not anywhere near Chicago. It doesn't matter. It's a ministry. And,
that's right.
And there's probably somebody from your hometown at one point in time that's been in Chicago, Illinois, that came in contact with Pacific Garden Mission. I was so surprised as I crossed the country and talked to people to find out how many folks, how many lives have been touched and changed through Pacific Garden Mission. Everybody at some point in time hits a real low spot in their life. And that's
who we're here for.
And not only that, but the radio program Unshackled has touched the lives of millions of people, not just in the U.S., but all over the world, because Unshackled airs on international shortwave, and it gets into places where the Internet doesn't go. So
exactly.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us today, and I want to stay in contact with Pacific Garden Mission. And by all means, if you can work with the mission and volunteer your time or your home or a space, contact these folks. Is there anyone in particular there that they would ask for if they were to call and they have, you know, they want to go further with this?
Well, they can call, ask for me, and I will put them in contact with who they need to be in contact with. So ask for Pastor Phil.
Pastor Phil. All right. Yes. I appreciate your time, sir, and God bless.
And thank you for your call. Thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
God bless.
If you already own a TW2010 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna, and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Trans World Adventurer 4040 Array Box in center section only. Right now, only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Trans World Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide. And in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with a deluxe travel bag. It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Trans World Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, TedRandall.com, TedRandall.com, and click on the link for Trans World Antennas. Take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040. As a radio disclosure listener, we need to hear from you. Let us know you're listening. Let us know what you think about this radio program. Do you have some ideas? Some people that you'd like to hear on Radio Disclosure, or some subjects that you'd like to hear covered? Let us know. Go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. You'll find a place where you can send us an email. Now, the website is still under construction, so please don't mind our mess. Tell us what city you're listening in, what kind of radio you're using, and how's the signal coming in. Once again, go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. Thank you for listening to Radio Disclosure. Hello and welcome to Radio Disclosure. This is a little bit different program from normal, but I want you to grab the knob on that radio and turn it up a little bit, because I'm going to ask you a question. What if you went into work tomorrow and they called you in the office and they said, I'm sorry to tell you this, but you're getting laid off. Economics are bad. Business is down. We have to cut staff. You're one of 500 that's being laid off. But the job is over, effective immediately. Here's a little money severance pay. We wish you all the luck in the world. So you leave the job. You go home and you scratch your head. Start going through the newspaper looking for work. Calling the employment agencies. Sign up for unemployment. And do all those things. A week passes by, 2 weeks pass by, 3 weeks pass by. You go out, maybe you do some interviews. But nothing serious yet. So you keep going and going, and the next thing you know, especially if you have a family, bills are starting to pile up. And a few more months pass by. You're behind on the mortgage. Now you get a foreclosure notice. And they tell you, hey, pal, got to get out of this house. You got nowhere to go. And let's just suppose for a minute you don't have relatives. You don't have friends or relatives. You can't necessarily move your whole family in with somebody. So there you are. Now, what do you do? Well, you know, you're out of the house, and you're not really any better off trying to rent an apartment somewhere because you've still got payments, all these payments to make, and you got kids, and you got all these responsibilities. So you wind up selling off what, you know, furniture you have and things you have, and you liquidated most of your savings, and you wind up in the end with staying in a motel room with your kids. You got to keep them off the street. But you're running out of resources. Unemployment checks are coming in, but you can only do so much with that. So you see you're staying at this motel, and you're looking for work. Can't find work. And this is the story. This is what's happening all across the country right now. We have people living in tent cities. I mean, large tent cities. And the people who are living in those tent cities, a lot of them have degrees. They've got college education behind them. You know, you've been told all your life, get a college education because you'll get a good job. Well, I don't want to say we've been lied to. I just think we've been hoodwinked. We've had a bunch of thugs and criminals take over our country from a business standpoint. People who've learned how to lie on spreadsheets. And they've pretty well near, they've just launched a bomb on the American economy, claiming there's money where there is no money, shuffling papers, collecting bonuses. But there you are, you're in the motel. Now your unemployment runs out. And the next thing you know, you got your kids and your wife, and now you're living in a tent. On the edge or inside of a major city somewhere, just attempting to survive, grabbing a free meal from a rescue mission. How do you find a job if you're living in a tent? What address do you give? I don't know. This is all just crazy. And yet that's the way it is. And this is the United States of America. I heard a story here just recently. Gal's about 29, 30 years old, registered nurse, lost her job, wound up going through all of her savings, lost her apartment, sold her car. She had to. No choice. Some folks get their cars repossessed, but she was fortunate enough to be able to sell hers. Her and the two girls in a motel room for a period of time, and then out on the street living in a tent. And then if you're going to take your kids into a shelter because you want to get them out of the cold, we have the situation you're going to hear about just in a minute about, you know, the shelters in New York City where you have 600 people inside. And out of those 600 people, you have people who have mental illness. You have people who are drug addicts. You have people who are just hardcore criminals in this room of 600 people. And then you've got your kids in with those people. And these are the hardcore chronic homeless people that have been around for a long time. This has been their way of life. And now your children are exposed to it. And you have to go back and think about the fact that all of this started, all of this is a result of a bunch of people lying and cheating on spreadsheets, absconding with other people's money. That's the real cause of it. But that doesn't help anything. You know, we know what the cause is. How do we fix it? We can't get Congress to fix it. They just keep giving the criminals more money. So now, what we're doing here is I am advocating that everybody that's within the sound of my voice, if you have a spare bedroom, if you have a little thing off the side of your house with an outside door, if you have a basement apartment, if you have a garage area that can be turned into a living quarters, just temporary. We're not talking about the lap of luxury here. We're not talking about something luxurious. We're talking about basic necessities. a place for somebody to stay, a place for a mom and two kids, or a father and son, or an elderly couple, or whatever it may be, to get them off the street. Can you open your home to somebody like that? Is it possible that you might have some space that could be converted so that we could get somebody out of a tent? And I'm not talking about chronic people, the chronic homeless. You don't want to take in somebody like that without knowing who they are, because you could wind up in more problems yourself than you'd know what to do with. But we're being overrun by legitimate homeless people. When I say legitimate, these are people who had jobs. These are people who had homes. These are people who were living what you would consider to be the American dream, that their whole life has fallen apart because they've lost jobs. Even if they had money invested in the stock market, they've lost the majority of that. And if they liquidate it, they can only live on that for a certain period of time. But if you have a place in your home, if you have a cottage somewhere, if you have some place that you can allow somebody to stay that's living in a tent, give them time to regroup. Give them some time off for just a little bit. Take the pressure off where they can actually logically think about going out and finding something to do, finding some place to work or to pursue some business venture or anything. Get up on their feet. If you've got something like that, we're asking you to participate and to do this because it's the right thing to do. This is one way that we can fight back in this current economic climate that we have. And in the meantime, if you can't do that, let's say, well, I don't have any space. I don't have anything like that. I'd like to help people out, but I just don't have anything. Well, then there's some organizations that you can volunteer your time. Some organizations you can send them some money instead of sending that check to these preachers that are, they've got the three rolls straight away, living in multi-million dollar houses and flying $20 million jet airplanes. Forget those cats right now. Forget them. Let's start helping the folks that really need the help. You know, contact your local city rescue mission and tell them, I got some space in my house. I would like to help somebody out. And let them screen and find a good candidate for you. And if you can't do that, then write those folks a check for $100, $200, or whatever you can afford. Keep them going, because they indeed are the ones that are taking the people off the streets and providing them with something and a place to stay. They're actually, you know, they're offering a solution of some sort. Well, I've got some things I want you to listen to, so stay tuned. You're listening to Radio
with us
Disclosure.
Is Don Worrell, and Don is the CEO of the Nashville Rescue Mission. And, of course, we're, you know, the subject is homelessness, and this is a man that knows all about it.
And I know a little. I don't know about all, but I know a little.
You know, there's, I guess what I want to say is we've had, one of the things I've been trying to kind of define and divide between is the chronic homelessness or the folks that are homeless, I guess I want to say, that are systemic. And these are the people that you normally minister to, the folks that you are there for and are wanting to engage in their lives and give them the tools and all the necessary things to make changes if they want to change.
We actually take care of both, and very few cities in the rescue missions, and there's roughly 350 rescue missions like ours across the United States. Most rescue missions will take care of the chronic homeless, and they'll take care of the new homeless, and they'll take care of the folks that decide that, you know, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I want to get some help. Chronic, according to the HUD definition, is, and I don't have it memorized, but you have to be homeless, I think, for 3 years, or you have to have 4 episodes of homelessness in 3 years or something like that. And there are a lot of folks that are chronic homeless. They've been homeless for a long time. They're very difficult to deal with. Many of those have been homeless for a long time. I guess the word to use. I don't like to use this word, but they're hardcore. They're the hardcore homeless. They're the, you know, the guy that's really, really got the difficult crack addiction or you know, alcoholism or something like that. You can help them, but they're not the easiest group of people to help with, and we take care of them, and we are a shelter, not just a recovery program, but we take care of them. Then you have the folks that, you know, are what I call new homeless. They've been on the streets, you know, within 6 months, a year, or something like that. And, you know, some of it comes because they made some wrong choices. Some of it comes because the economy slowed down. They lost their jobs. Now, the ones who are the new homeless are probably the easiest to help get back into society. You know, they haven't got the life issues like bad health because if they've abused drugs or something like this. But we take care of both of them, and most rescue missions take care of people like that. One of the interesting fact, and you're a radio program, so you might be interested in facts, we're looking at the economy today, and we're thinking about what is going to happen. You know, you read in the newspaper every day, you know, people are losing their houses, this and that, and the other thing. We started doing surveys specifically to find out why our folks are coming to us. And from March the 9th through March the 16th of this year, we had 32 individual men, not families, just individual men. 21 of those 32 said they're homeless because they lost their jobs.
Well, I guess there's a trend, and in different parts of the country it's different. But for example, I know on the West Coast, out by, I believe it's San Francisco, and I'm going to get my name. So many cities been thrown at me here today, I can't keep up with them all. Where the tent city is so large the local government is thinking about legalizing the thing or making it legal.
Right. There are there's a rescue mission, I think it's in Fresno. You have to check that to make sure, but I think it's in Fresno. They literally manage a tent city for the city of Fresno. And you know, honestly, I mean, we have 700 beds. I mean, actually, we have 710 beds. I've been at the rescue mission since 1985. I started the rescue mission in 1985 and, you know, started as putting people to bed at nights and working way up, and I'm the CEO of the day. But I remember back in the early 1986, late 1980s, our men's population will be so low that we would actually shut down a dormitory during the summer months because we wouldn't have that many people. I was just looking at some numbers today. Well, matter of fact, they're sitting on my desk right here. We have 710 beds in our facility, and on March the 15th, we had 707 people staying here. On March the 14th, we had 710. On March the 13th, we had 692. Go back to March the 11th, we had 704. And the weather's not really that blistery, cold type weather. There's more and more homeless people. Let me see, 3 years ago, we had about 450 beds. So there is a growth in homelessness. And one of the things that I'm concerned about is most cities have come up with a program to end chronic homelessness, and that is the thing that costs the most amount of money. The chronic homeless person is the person who's going to visit the hospital, going to visit the clinics, going to, you know, have the most incarcerations and things like this, and it is expensive. And we're putting a lot of effort and a lot of time in dealing with chronic homelessness, and according to HUD, chronic homelessness is going down. But what people aren't talking about is, as I call them, new homeless going up.
Well,
homelessness is increasing.
Okay, I had a firsthand experience myself. We had we were in downtown Nashville. We were on 8th Avenue, and we had a building down there, and there was a radio studio in the building. So we encountered a number of the homeless folks down there, and you know, me being very naive at the time, I decided to record some of their stories as to, you know, how did they wind up like this. And we put some of this up on the web and whatnot. And what was interesting is I found out that a good majority of them
will just tell you anything where they can. They'll just make it up on the fly, you know. And if your back is turned, they wind up stealing from you or doing something worse. And so this is not for the faint of heart. I mean, this is, you know, dealing with homeless people, you've got to have experience. You have to have wisdom. You have to know what you're doing.
Yeah. You're exactly correct. I wouldn't want to say that every homeless person is going to steal from you and every homeless person is going to lie to you. But it's just like juvenile delinquents. You know, if you talk to a certain age group, older folks, you know, all kids under 16, they're juvenile delinquents, you know. And that's not true. There are some kids getting in trouble. There are some homeless folks that cause probably. I use the 10% rule. 10% of the homeless are ones that cause bad reputation for everybody. But one of the things with us is we have a women's ministry too. We take care of homeless women. We're seeing so many women with older boys, you know, 12, 13-year-olds, that their husband has said, see you later, baby. You know, job's not here, and I'm going. And you probably don't have the time, but I can tell you the story about the police a few years ago brought us a lady, and she was a blonde-haired lady. I'll never forget it. She was really a good-looking lady, and she had two kids, and they were fairly well-dressed kids, you know, like 6, 7 years old, like that, and said, you know, we don't know what's happened. Her husband and her come down here and stayed in the Days Motel, you know, and he paid the motel bill and had to go back to Indiana and never come back again. What happened? You know, they checked into, did he get hurt and all like that. When they got down to the bottom of it, he brought his kids, he lost his job, brought his wife and kids down here, put them in a hotel room, paid for about a week's worth of hotel, went back to Indiana. Him and his secretary or a friend or somebody from the business he used to work for went away, and he just dumped her in Nashville. And now that's extreme, but things like that happen every day. I think with the economy getting a little tough like it is, it's happening more and more and more. You know, so I hate to lump every homeless person into what I call the 10% rule. 10% of them, yeah, are playing a game. 10% of them are, you know, trying to, you know, how can I get the most for doing the least and stuff like that. But I think 90% of them, you know, they're really out there. And they're just like, one thing I learned at the rescue mission years and years ago, and when I come to this realization, my life became a lot easier. Everybody's got a mother and a father, and everybody needs to be treated like they're a child of God. And I try to think that. And I'm not saying you didn't, but, you know, we get that tendency sometime because we get taken by a guy or we get clipped by a guy. Well, that's all of them. And it's not all of them.
Well, I guess when people are living in the street for a period of time, they toughen up and they become survivors. You know?
That's true. I agree with that.
And I think at that point, to them, you know, they're looking at survival. So if they can tell a good story, and it's going to mean survival,
and that I agree with. And I think what our organization and every other organization is working with these folks needs to do, as I've always said, and I tell our staff, when the guy comes to the point he tells you his real name, you've made headway with him.
I heard a story. It was told to me. I know it's true. But the names are going to be withheld and the circumstances.
Okay.
But there was a young lady, I guess about 20, 28, 30 years of age, somewhere in that vicinity, living in the street in Nashville. I think it was at a tent location. I don't know how many tent cities there are or how many places there are tents in Nashville. But this is where she was. And she had two young daughters. She's an RN, lost her job. She's been all over town looking for work for a number of months. And I know because I did this, I did check it out, and a lot of these healthcare companies, because she was taking care of, she was doing outpatient care, a lot of them are just down to skeleton crews. I mean, they have just cut everything to the bone. And the reason for that, who knows? I mean, it could be the economy. They could be using the economy as an excuse. It could be legitimate. I don't know. But anyhow, someone contacted the Nashville Rescue Mission. And it happened through you folks somehow. Within a couple of weeks, they found a place. It was an older couple that opened their home, and she's now living with them. I guess they have a basement apartment. They took her in and the two girls, and everything's really cool. Everybody's very happy with this. Okay,
that happens every day.
And
I mean, I'm not saying every day, but we people come to us daily and with almost the same kind of situations. And what we try to do is, we try to meet the person where they are and help them get where they need to be. Now, some people need to be on a program. Some people just need some advice and some guidance to get into, you know, good stable housing. I mean, at least, you know, okay, somebody, well, she lived in an apartment in somebody's basement right now. It was better than a tent underneath a bridge.
Well, see, what I've been trying to do is I've been trying to encourage our listeners, you know, we can talk about the economy. We can put the blame wherever we want to. That doesn't help our problem. Our problem is we have homeless people, and we have a brand new group of homeless people that I'm hearing about, folks right. that some of them have college. So, you know, some of them have degrees.
Many do.
And for some reason, the way the job market is and whatnot, and some of them are looking for work in earnest. And it just hasn't happened. So, you know, I'm saying to folks, if you've got a spare bedroom, if you have a basement apartment, if you've got a garage that you can make a makeshift apartment out of for a while until the person has a chance to get up on their feet, this would be a wonderful thing to do and a way out. But you need someone to help you screen. You just can't take somebody in without having a professional person kind of look this over, because you may not be helping, you may be hindering.
You are absolutely correct. Goes back to the 10% rule again. Mm-hmm. You do not want one of those 10% living in your basement or living in a spare bedroom or something. I would recommend, there's another organization in town which is called the Campus Human Development, and they do a lot of good work. There's the Renewal House. There's us. There's a lot of different, there's Salvation Army. I would recommend, if you have something like that, if you have, you know, you're not just, because another thing you have to consider is sometimes, I read an article one time, in an article, and I'm trying to be very, very politically correct when I say this. I read an article, a lady was writing an article, and she basically said, you know, it's quite common on the streets, if you're a woman, to trade sex for a bed. You know, and that's, this is her article. I'm just replaying her article. So you got to make sure that the people have the place for the person to stay. That's the right place for the people to stay, the person to stay. And you need to go through an agency so the agency can check out where the person's going to be and the person who's going to be there. You know, you make a good marriage. You know, you make a good agreement right there. It doesn't have to be forever and a day because, you know, like the girls you said a minute ago, she's a nurse. You know, she just lost her job. Probably the biggest problem she had is getting daycare for the two kids. She could probably find work, but she cannot find daycare for the kids. That's one of the biggest problems you have in homelessness today, especially women, is finding affordable daycare for your children. Getting housing, that's no problem. You can get all the Section 8 housing you want if you qualify for that. Getting medical care, that's not a real problem. It's getting daycare for those kids when you go back to work. So what she probably had to do was find a place where she could put her feet down, you know, get involved with another group of people, get into some type of a daycare setting, and then go out and say, here I am, I'm a nurse. And they say, whoa, you know, we need a good quality nurse today. Come to work with us. But I agree with you, and I really applaud the fact that you're doing this, but you are correct that it needs to be in a setting where both sides are looked at and it's a perfect marriage.
Well, yeah, and the thing of it is, if a person is out of work, and let's say they have two children and they're trying to find a job, it's difficult if you don't have an address. I mean, who's going to hire you? You know, you put
right.
down living in a car, you know.
In our rescue mission, one of the things we did is, if you graduate from our program, we'll help you get a job. We actually have a telephone number here that is not even tied to the rescue mission. It is just a different telephone number because, you know, our telephone number is 255-2475. You know, and we go, that's the mission. You know, well, if you get a number from 780-9972, and that's not the number, I'm just saying 780-9972. Well, let me see who this is, you know, because then you pick it up and you start dealing with the person on level footing. You don't say, oh, this person is a homeless person. This person, you know, lived on the street. This person might have had a drug addiction. This person might have this, might have that, might have the other thing. And there are a lot of people that get judged on their past. And I understand your past does have some impact on your presence. But I think also at the same time in our society, we need to be forgiving and we need to say, okay, you made a mistake or this happened in your life and you had to go through this, but now let's help you become what you should be and how you should be and give you an opportunity. Opportunities, I think, is the only thing we owe anybody. We owe people opportunities to do better.
Of course, now, if there are folks listening, and I've encouraged them, I've said, you know, look around. You know, do you have a room on your house that's accessible, you know, that has a door on the outside, or do you trust having someone in your home? Do you feel compelled in your heart to help out and do something like this? Then what you need to do is you need to call, depending on what city you're in.
And I understand you are a national program, correct?
Correct.
Okay, I'm going to give you a website. www.agrm.org. When you come up, just you go through there, and it'll give you every state in the nation. You can click on your state, and it'll tell you of an organization like ours in your state, and it'll even tell you what cities they're in. And, you know, you might have somebody 5 miles from you, and you didn't even know they were there, you know, that you need to call them up and say, hey, I heard on, you know, that I might be able to work with you guys and helping in homelessness. And I promise you, every rescue mission you contact in America would say, thank you for calling, and here's what we need.
Well, see, what I'm saying is folks that have something like that or feel burdened to do this, and I hope that a lot of folks do, if they contact and they go through this website, this agrm.org, find their local Nashville rescue mission.
Right. Could be in Boise, could be in Poughkeepsie, could be in New York City, could be wherever.
And they call you on the phone, or they call your organization, and they say, look, we've got an apartment, we'd like to help out, and then let you folks place the people, because, and not that the outcome is guaranteed to be perfect, heavens no, but I mean, it's just that they've got a much better chance of being effective in helping someone if they're...
Right.
Now, for folks that don't have a facility, they said, boy, I'd just like to, this is not the time, ladies and gentlemen, to pull back the purse strings and to put the money back in the piggy bank. This is when you really need to open up and you really need to help out. I believe, you know, I guess in my own way of thinking, that if a person shows compassion and wants to help out and will give financially to organizations and in particular the Nashville Rescue Mission, I believe God will bless you and honor you for that as well.
I agree with you.
And I guess I want to open the door here for you to talk a little bit about, you know, about the Nashville Rescue Mission in terms of, and I know in this economy, I bet donations are probably down. You know, you probably are faced, you know, with economics yourself, trying to figure out how we're going to make all this work.
Right. Oh. The Nashville Rescue Mission has been in existence since 1954, actually. Monday, we turned 55 years old. We've been doing the same thing since the day we opened up, just trying to help people get back on their feet and accomplish what they need to accomplish, help them overcome addictions. We're a Christian-based ministry. We're unashamedly a Christian-based ministry. We have, in 2008, we served a little over 548,000 meals. 232,000 times someone slept in one of our beds in 2008. We had 150 people graduated from a life recovery program, which is a 7-month program. That means they come in with clothes on their back and left here with a job. We money. Very few people like us accept government money. It, you know, we have budgeted this year alone for $550,000. $475,000 was last year. $550,000 just to pay our electricity and our water and our gas bill this year. You know, so we're a big organization. We actually need, every time we put a person to bed every night, it costs us over $15 a night. By the time we go ahead and pay the salaries and put the program together and you know everything that we do. So you get a big bang for your buck. I mean, keep a person in jail, it's like 60. You know, so you're getting a big buck, and at least with us and organizations like ours across the country, we're trying to help that person get back on their feet and go out. And as I tell people, we want people to become productive taxpaying citizens. They walk in with a drug addiction or an alcohol addiction or undereducated. Last year, we helped 11 people get their GEDs. Practically every rescue mission in America that I know of, they have an education wing, and they help people train or prepare for the GED. Last year was really a slow year for us for GEDs. We normally get 18 to 20 a year. We get GEDs. I can take you down to Columbus, Georgia right now, and I can show you a pastor of a church, and a fairly decent-sized church, who basically got his Christian start at our rescue mission. You can't outgive God. You can't outgive God. And the Bible tells us, and it says very plainly, the poor you will have with you always. And you have an opportunity to take care of them. So that's what I just say, you know, follow God's command.
One thing that's been heavy on my mind lately, and this is one of the reasons for this radio show, is the fact that folks who have been faithful as far as working and doing their part, trying to raise their family, trying to raise kids, and then all of a sudden they get cooked in this economic thing that we're going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve an opportunity, you know, and
they do.
And if not, you know, until that opportunity arrives for them, they deserve a timeout for a little bit. I mean,
they do.
And go ahead.
I had a real good friend of mine who used to be a professor at MTSU, and he taught sociology. And every year in the fall, his sociology class was required to take a field trip, and they came to the rescue mission, and we became friends because he did this for quite a few years, and he would bring them through, and we would do a tour, and all of his students got to see homelessness. And one of the last things that he would ask me before they left that day, he would say, "Don," he says, "in your opinion, what's the main cause of homelessness in America today?" And he started this back in the 80s. I said, "The breakdown of the American family." And I still believe that today. Back in the 30s and the 40s, you know, when we went through some tough times with, you know, the Great Depression, when I'm not saying we're in a depression, when we got through the Great Depression back then, you know, everybody had a family they could turn to. I mean, you know, your family might be taking care of these people, why you did this or did that and did the other thing. Today in our society, a lot of the folks that end up at our rescue missions, you know, we encourage them to call their mom or their dad, you know, and some of them haven't talked to their family in 5 and 6 and 7 years. You know, that breakdown, you and I mean, I know me personally, I mean, if something happened in my life, I mean, I got kids. I mean, they'd be more than glad to help daddy out. I mean, I've got uncles and aunts and things like this I could go to and say, you know, plant is closed down, you know, I don't know what to do. You know, I'm going to lose the house. Yeah, well, we can tide you over for a little bit, because they know when their things went bad, they could tide. We don't have that today. Now, we have it for some people, but some people do not have that family. And I think because of that, Christians like me, and I'm praying you're a Christian too, we have that obligation to be that family to those folks. I'm not saying you got to take care of them the rest of your life. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying we do have an obligation to reach out to them and help them over the rough spots.
Well, most folks wouldn't want to take care of their brother or sister for the rest of their life, especially if they're able-bodied people.
Right. You know, I understand, you know, and I understand that.
But by the same token, I totally agree with you in the standpoint that, you know, sometimes, and I know the breakdown of the American family is really the cause of this, because during the Depression, you had large families living together, and they didn't think anything of that. They thought that was normal. And some of them lived together before the Depression anyways. You know, I mean, but it doesn't, I mean, sometimes I think maybe we put too much emphasis on family from the standpoint that sometimes family members are not really all that special. I mean, they're just related to us.
Right.
You know, we're a community. Can really be a family.
And you remember back when you used to sit down and Dad sat on one end of the table, Mom sat on the other, you and your brothers and sisters sat there and you had supper together?
Well, see, I didn't have brothers and sisters, but I can remember that time, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But I didn't have brothers and sisters either, but I remember sitting down with my family and eating. You know, if you talk to the average kid in school today, you know, that's you do. That's not a common thing today.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on board. And I guess I'd ask one final question, and that is, and I'm not using this as a lever, you know, when I say that
Sure. We're
seeing more and more professional people living in tent cities or living on the street, because the person that has no credentials and has no education at all, they're just as much deserving of an opportunity as someone that does have credentials.
So much so.
I guess the thing of it is I find it shocking that we have more and more of those kind of people that are living that existence, who have a very frustrated life, and they're trying desperately to regroup, but they just haven't found their footing.
Right.
And it's something that I think that most people don't give a lot of thought to. But, you know, the thing that I think about, and that is, there's a lot of folks today, everything's fine, but your life could turn on a dime. In other words, a series of things could go wrong way beyond your control.
And fortunes are made and lost in a matter of months anymore. If you remember back in the 90s, and, you know, we had the dot coms, and, I mean, people were going around, and now all of a sudden, bang, where's the dot coms? Boom. I mean, mm-hmm. Fortunes were lost. I think the one thing that we need to do today, personally myself, and if I was younger, I would do this. I'm thinking about retiring now, not you know, starting a business. We need to get some entrepreneurs out there and just go out and just start some businesses and put these folks back to work. We are a working nation. As you said, we've got professionals today sitting there. I was in church last night, and a friend of mine, I mean, she just lost her job, you know, and that girl has a master's degree. You know, it's just they closed. They cut back, and four people had to go. Guess what? She was one of the four. And I said, what are you going to do? She said, I don't know. She said, nobody's hiring right now. You know, I mean, and now there's a person right there. You know, she's got family. She's got her church family. We're not going to let her go hungry. But, you know, unless something happens where she can go find an opportunity to put her master's degree back to work, you're going to have a person with a master's degree could be homeless.
There you go. That's exactly what I'm saying, and it can happen to any of us.
Any of us.
You know,
addiction and homelessness could care less what color you are, what your socioeconomic background is, you know, how old you are, how young you are. It could care less. It just hits us all.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Mr. Worrell, for coming on with us here and talking about this. And I want folks to keep the Nashville Rescue Mission top of mind. And really, when you think about it, your best insurance policy, as far as your career goes, is to pitch in and help those less fortunate out. Because as they get back into society and they get started,
they start making money, they spend money, you earn money.
that is true. And the other thing you were talking about, and it makes perfect sense. If we could just find a new group of entrepreneurs
that
could get out there and start businesses and then base those businesses on honesty and integrity, you know, not like what we're seeing in our society today that's caused us such a migraine. If we could do that, there would be no stopping. Go ahead.
I'm going to quote a commercial, and we both got to go. Mm-hmm. Allstate Insurance, probably one of the biggest and best insurance companies around by a lot of people's standards, started in 1931, right in the height of the Depression.
Well, there you go. Thank you so much for coming on board. Their website is NashvilleRescueMission.org. That's all one word.
Right.
NashvilleRescueMission.org. The other website that Mr. World just gave us was agrm.org. And we're just inviting folks to get involved, help make a difference. So thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I must say this has been a different radio disclosure, but I hope it's caused some of you folks to think about those that are less fortunate right now, folks that have been thrust out into the street due to the economic crisis. Once again, if you can open your home up to a homeless person or a homeless family, if you have some space in your home and you're willing to allow somebody to stay there, contact your local rescue mission. Don't try to do this on your own totally, but do volunteer that space and take part in this. If you can even give money to a rescue mission or try to help out in this situation, I'm sure those efforts would really be appreciated, and take it to heart. Thank you for listening to Radio Disclosure. We'll be back same station next week for more Radio Disclosure.